On this 29th day of August 2006, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So we're reading from chapter 2, contents of the Gita summarized, and it is text number 20, probably on page 91 or thereabouts. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavitava nabhuya. Ajo nitya kshasvato yam purano. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavitava nabhuya. Ajo nitya kshasvato yam purano. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Jayate mriyate vakadachan. For the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. Purport. Qualitatively, the small atomic fragmental part of the Supreme Spirit is one with the Supreme. He undergoes no changes like the body. Sometimes the soul is called the steady or kutastha. The body is subject to six kinds of transformations. It takes its birth from the womb of the mother's body, remains for some time, grows, produces some effects, gradually dwindles, and at last vanishes into oblivion. The soul, however, does not go through such changes. The soul is not born, but because he takes on a material body, the body takes its birth. The soul does not take birth there, and the soul does not die. Anything which has birth also has death. And because the soul has no birth, he therefore has no past, present, or future. He is eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. That is, there is no trace in history of his coming into being. Under the impression of the body, we seek the history of birth, etc., of the soul. The soul does not at any time become old as the body does. The so-called old man, therefore, feels himself to be in the same spirit as in his childhood or youth. The changes of the body do not affect the soul. The soul does not deteriorate like a tree, nor anything material. The soul has no byproduct either. The byproducts of the body, namely children, are also different individual souls. And, owing to the body, they appear as children of a particular man. The body develops because of the soul's presence, but the soul has neither offshoots nor change. Therefore, the soul is free from the six changes of the body. In the Katha Upanishad 1.2.18, we also find a similar passage, which reads, Jayate mriyate va vipashchin, nayam kutashchin, nababhu vakashchit, ajo nityak shasvato hang yam purano, nahanyate hanyamane sharire. The meaning and purport of this verse is the same as in the Bhagavad Gita, but here in this verse there is one special word, vipashchit, which means learned or with knowledge. The soul is full of knowledge, or full always with consciousness. Therefore, consciousness is the symptom of the soul. Even if one does not find the soul within the heart, where he is situated, one can still understand the presence of the soul simply by the presence of consciousness. Sometimes we do not find the sun in the sky owing to clouds, or for some other reason. But the light of the sun is always there, and we are convinced that it is therefore daytime. As soon as there is a little light in the sky early in the morning, we can understand that the sun is in the sky. Similarly, since there is some consciousness in all bodies, whether man or animal, we can understand the presence of the soul. The consciousness of the soul is, however, different from the consciousness of the Supreme, because the Supreme consciousness is all knowledge, past, present, and future. The consciousness of the individual soul is prone to be forgetful. When he is forgetful of his real nature, he obtains education and enlightenment from the superior lessons of Krishna. But Krishna is not like the forgetful soul. If so, Krishna's teachings of the Bhagavad Gita would be useless. There are two kinds of souls, namely the minute particle soul, Anuatma, and the super soul, Vibhuatma. This is also confirmed in the Katha Upanishad 1.2.20 in this way. Anodaniyan mahato mahiyan atmasya jantor nihito guhayam tamakratu paschati vita shoko datu prasaran mahimanam atmanaha. Both the super soul or paramatma and the atomic soul or jivatma are situated on the same tree of the body within the same heart of the living being. And only one who has become free from all material desires as well as lamentations can, by the grace of the Supreme, understand the glories of the soul. Krishna is the fountainhead of the supersoul also, as it will be disclosed in the following chapters. And Arjuna is the atomic soul, forgetful of his real nature. Therefore, he requires to be enlightened by Krishna, or by his bona fide representative, the spiritual master. Om Jnanam Tamandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chukshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this verse kind of summarizes the lesson that Krishna is giving here in these 20 verses from text 11 to text 30. There's a kind of lesson in the soul. This is a distinct part of the Bhagavad Gita. He sometimes repeats himself a little bit, so this verse summarizes the basic idea that the soul is never born, never dies, he's original, eternal, he's never killed. And this knowledge should change our whole sense of who we are and what our function in this world is. The knowledge is not immediately perceivable by our senses. The soul, as explained here in this purport, anodaniyan. We say the soul is 1/10,000th part the tip of a hair, but as I was explaining, that's an approximation, is really infinitesimal. Anodaniyan means smaller than the smallest, smaller than the atom. Whatever we can perceive, even with our greatest electron microscopes, is still not big enough, it's still not powerful enough to see the soul. But the soul is there. It's an irreducible particle of spirit. And that's why it's called Ansha. Ansha is a word that means little particle of the Supreme Spirit. So Krishna says, Mamai Vangsho Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Mama Eva Ansha, Jiva Bhuta, Jiva Loke. In this world, the living entities known as Jivas are my eternal fragmental parts. Now, it doesn't mean that because we are part of Krishna, therefore Krishna is diminished. It's not like that. It's like the sunshine and the sun. The sun is emanating all the sunshine, but it's not diminished by the sunshine. You know, it just has that power to emanate the energy, and it stays as it is. So this is a very important point, because unlike the impersonalists who think that the Supreme Brahman is chopped off, that we're little parts of the Brahman, and covered by avidya, or ignorance. And when we get rid of the avidya, we again become the Brahman. We merge back into the Brahman. This is the impersonalist view, which is directly contradicted by the teachings of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. So, by understanding that we never take birth as spirits, we never die, and we don't undergo any change even in this body. The body changes, the soul remains the same. So, this creates a dichotomy between the ever-changing body and the eternal soul. The soul, as I've explained before, and as explained in the Shastra, is by nature full of bliss. In the Vedanta Sutra, Prabhupada would often quote this sutra, Anandamaya Vyasat. Anandamaya Vyasat. It really describes the Supreme Brahman. Is by nature full of bliss. Because we are Ansha of the Supreme Brahman, we are part and parcel of that Supreme Brahman, we have the qualities of the Supreme Brahman in minute degree. So we also have that quality of being by nature blissful. But what do we find in our life, in our actual life in this world, material world? Well, ups and downs. It's sometimes some happiness, and sometimes some distress. And ultimately, there's this kind of undertow of anxiety, because we know that whatever we have here, even if we don't know it consciously, it's there, is all very temporary. We may have a situation, we may have a nice home or a nice family, or whatever we have, money in the bank, but it's all temporary. It's just connected to this body, and the body is like a bubble in the ocean. It just lasts for a little bit and it's gone. So we can never truly be happy on the platform of this body or the platform of even the mind. We have to come to the soul platform and find our happiness in connecting with the Supreme Spirit, namely Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then we will be truly happy. And that connection is through what we call bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, devotional service. The reason why we're forgetting that we're souls is because we're absorbed in the body, we're serving the demands of the body and the mind. We are servants by nature. Servants means, what does a servant mean? It means that you are responsive, you understand the demands of something or someone, and you try to fulfill those demands. That's service. Well, now, thinking we're the body, we're thinking that I'm serving my demands. I want to eat something, I go out and get some ice cream, and I have a good time and eat. That's me. I just had a good time. But really, you just serve the needs of the belly and the tongue, isn't it? That's not you. That's the whole point here. So, and you know, that's just one demand. There's the eating and the demands of the eyes, of the ears, of all of the senses, the mind, you know. So we're constantly serving those demands, and we're thinking that we're serving ourselves. But in truth, we're trapped. We're trapped in this illusory life of serving that which is not us. And because the body and the environment is always changing, sometimes the sensations are very pleasing. Sometimes we're honored. You know, sometimes we take a birth and we're in you know, a nice body, nice situation. Great, good karma, you know. But sometimes it's not like that, even in this very lifetime. So there's that duality. It's called duality, good and bad, pleasure and pain. Now we remember, if we just turn back a few pages, that Krishna describes in text 14, matra sparshas tu konteya, shitoshna sukaduka da. It's a very nice lesson. He says, the touch, literally sparsha means to contact. The contact of the senses with their sense objects is called matra sparshas. It produces different varieties of sensations. Shita, ushna, sukha, dukkha. It's a very nice description. Shita is cool or cold, and ushna is hot. So cool and hot, and pleasure and pain. Pain and pleasure, sukha, dukkha. This is the nature. So we have to learn to tolerate. Agamapahino, they come and they go, they come and they go. Tamstatikshrasabharata. You have to learn to tolerate. Now one may say, okay, I can see how I have to learn to tolerate the pain, but why do I have to learn how to tolerate the pleasure? Let it come. Let's go. Right? I don't want to tolerate. But the point is that in order to progress in spiritual life and rise up to the platform of non-duality, beyond the modes of nature, as we say, one has to learn to tolerate the allurements of material happiness. If we try for material happiness, then we forget we're spirit. We're on the bodily concept. Then we have to have the distress. Two sides of the same coin. Can't have one without the other. This is the great illusion of material life. That somehow I can get on the pleasure side and I won't, you know, suffer the pain side. What's the whole life? We're trying to maximize the pleasures, minimize the pains. It just doesn't work that way. When you are on the material platform, inevitably you perform vikarma. Because we have to remember, you know, Krishna is speaking this Bhagavad Gita, as Prabhupada explains at the end of the purport here, Krishna is different from us. He's not conditioned. He's beyond the defects of the mind and senses, the tendency to make mistakes and cheat and all these things. So therefore, whatever he speaks is worth listening to. He knows. You have to accept that premise if you're going to get anything out of the Bhagavad Gita, the song of God. So if we connect with Krishna, then we can get beyond he's actually able to reciprocate with us eternally beyond the limitations of the body and mind. Whereas anything else in this world is going to be temporary. So what does he say in the fifth chapter? He says, Yehi sanspasharja boga dukkha yonai evate. He says, the very pleasures, you hear that word sparsha, sanspasharja boga, we just had that word sparsha in the previous verse, matra sparsha tu kanteya, the contact, literally the rubbing, the contact of the senses with the sense object. So he says, Yehi sanspasharja boga, sparsha-ja means born of contact, you get certain boga, that's enjoyment. But that boga, dukkha yoni, is the source of dukkha. What a dilemma. You mean I can't enjoy in this world? I have to. If I enjoy, then I'm going to suffer? Yes, if you try to enjoy materially, you will suffer. That's the point. So how do I enjoy? Because we're anandamaya vyasa. We're pleasure-seeking beings. We want ananda. You enjoy through Krishna consciousness. That, there's no reaction. There's no bad reaction. You chant Hare Krishna to your heart's content. You know, get into the holy name, feel the bliss of chanting. There's no bad reaction. None at all. There's only good reaction. Win-win situation. The only win-win situation. So Lord Rishabhdev, he's an expansion of Krishna. He describes this problem in his fifth canto. These verses are quoted in a purport here. I forget exactly which one. But he says there, Nunam pramatta kurate vikarma yadindriya pritaya apranoti. He says, certainly, this word nunam in Sanskrit means certainly, it's true. And this is Krishna speaking in the form of Rishabhdev. Pramatta kurate vikarma yadindriya pritaya apranoti. Those who are simply striving for this indriya priti, which simply means sense gratification, the pleasures of the body, they are really mad because you're doing something that is going to produce great suffering for yourself in the future. And you have to perform sinful activities called vikarma. So what I was getting at when I was describing that Krishna is categorically different than us, there's a government. Just like there's a government here, and if you violate the laws, then you catch you, they punish you. So there's also a universal government. And the law is the law of karma. If you violate the law, if you become a vicious person, you're always exploiting others and murdering them or stealing from them, then you may by some, you know, hook or crook escape the law in this life, but there's a law afterlife. And even in this life, you can't really be happy, isn't it? I mean, as devotees, we cringe from that idea, right? But there are people like that. So they don't look very happy. You know, even if they may get $100, $1,000, or even if they're able to steal $1,000,000, which happens through big crime, they're not happy people. Because inside, the conscience is burning, and they're always afraid that the government's going to get them. And as they get older, they know, oh, there's going to be a price to pay after life. So that's not the way to happiness. So nunam pramatta kurate vikarma yanandiya, and he says, on the very least, it'll bring you another body, material body. Nasadu manya yata atmanoya masanna pi klesha na asa deha. He says it's not very good. The word sadhu has different meanings. One common meaning, it's entered into the English dictionary, is a saintly person with knowledge. It's a sadhu. But sadhu as an adjective, also as an adjective, means good. In fact, you'll find that Krishna's friends, or even his boyfriends and girlfriends, when Krishna plays the flute or he dances, sometimes they'll say, oh, sadhu, sadhu. It precisely means bravo, bravo. You know, very good. So here he says, na sadhu. It's not good. I don't think, in my opinion, and his opinion counts because he's Krishna in form of Rishabhdev. Na sadhu manye, yata atmana. The word atma means jiva, the soul. Asanna pi klesha da asadeha. Because this effort to simply please the senses and acting in vikarma will get you another material body which produces klesha. Klesha means misery. So what to do? You know, all we know in our conditioned state is this kind of endeavor, isn't it? I mean, that's all I knew before I had any idea of Bhagavad Gita, that somehow fight against the material energy, make a little money, you know, smoke a little dope, whatever, try to be happy, and then, you know, the anxiety. You know, you have so many plans and then they don't work out. Okay, you know, you go through life that way, right? That's all you know. So it's all knowledge. The idea is knowledge. So the next verse, he says, Parabhavas tavaramo rajato yavan najigyasata atmatattvam. Here's a very key line. We can just understand these two lines. So the word parabhava, means defeat. We are defeated in our mission of life as souls if all we do in this lifetime is work on the material platform. Because that defeat is born out of ignorance. It's born out of ignorance of basically who we are. If we don't know who we really are as spirit, then how can we act properly for our best interest as spirit? We don't. We act for the interest of the body. And we're defeated because the body is ultimately destroyed. So anything in relation to the body, whether it's immediate pleasure or honor or family or whatever you have, you know, from Bill Gates' $60 billion down to the little peasant's, you know, home and his little field of grain, it's all taken away at death. Because it's disconnected to the body. The body dies. It no longer exists. You go on. And well, okay, it's like, you know, sorry, start again. The slate is clean. But it's not clean because you take with you your karma. And if you've been very sinful, performed with karma, then everything is ripped away and you enter maybe even a lower form of life or a very difficult human life. So what happened? You know, it's gone. Yeah.
If Krishna is all perfect and all complete, why sometimes he makes some of the devotees' life, imperfect? He especially makes either difficult for the devotees.
That's that for their purification. It's not karma. It's his own. It's a special mercy to put them through trouble so that they'll have no shelter other than him. Because devotees are at different stages. Devotees are trying to mix. I like Krishna, but I also like this, Maya. We're holding on. So Krishna...
Material troubles.
Huh?
Not just material troubles. Like say, if someone comes into Krishna consciousness, means it is through the mercy of Krishna. So why Krishna doesn't give... Say for example, if someone is in a family or somewhere, why Krishna gives mercy to only one member of the family instead of for the whole family, so that it's easy for them to...
Because that the family doesn't mean anything. In other words, you may by accident be in the same family, but mentality and the previous life is completely different. You know, for someone to be receptive to the message of Bhagavad Gita is a great boon. You know, in other words, to even be interested in this kind of subject matter, to have a little faith. And to want to associate and to read these kind of books is a great mercy. And it comes maybe from previous lifetimes of performing some kind of bhakti, you see? So to get born in a particular family, you may have no relation to those people in the previous lifetime. So that family has no, you know, thing. So, it's a mystery. It's a mystery of just how Krishna is working to purify us in our devotional life. Let me continue with this series of verses. I want to continue with this. So, parabhavastavada bodha jato yavan jigyasata atmatattvam. So this, in the Sanskrit language, there are pairs of words, just like we have in English. If I say, just as John drove to the beach, so you're waiting for me to complete a sentence, right? Just as John drove to the beach, Mary also drove to the beach. So Mary, you see? Or just as the sun is in the sky, similarly, the soul is in the body. You see? So you draw an analogy with that configuration. So Sanskrit also has those. The just as similarly is yata tata. We had in dehinosmin yata dehe komaram yovananjana tata dehantara prabdi yata tata. Just as the body, the soul is passing through the childhood and adolescence, middle age, so similarly, the soul leaves the body, gets another body at death. So there's also another pair, it's called yavat-tavat. Yavat-tavat is usually used in a negative way, which means that as long as you don't do A, you won't get B. Right? As long as you don't chant Hare Krishna, you won't be able to understand Krishna consciousness. So long, you see? So long, as long as you don't do this, you won't get that. So in this verse, he's using this yavat-tavat. So he says, parabhavastavadabodajato yavana jigyasatatma tattvam. So in Sanskrit, you can change the word order because it's an inflected language. So he puts the Haribo, welcome. Please sit here on the men's side. Come up. Very good. Hare Krishna. All right. Forget it. It's a motto factor. So, Paravabhastavadabodajato yavana jigyasatatma tattvam. That as long as one does not inquire into Atma Tattva, or the truth of the self, that long, one will suffer defeat in one's life. In other words, one will suffer birth and death. Why? Because that defeat is born of ignorance. But this is Vrishabhdev, verses, fifth canon. Paravavastavat abodha jata. Abodha means ignorance. We know that the Buddha, right, is someone who is very intelligent or enlightened, the enlightened one. So that same root is there, and abodha means without intelligence or ignorance, jata is born of. So your defeat is born of ignorance of who you are. Therefore, until you inquire into the truth of the soul, you'll still be in ignorance and you'll still be defeated. Then he goes on with another yavatavat, the second part of the verse. Yavat kriyastavati dhammanovai karmatmakam yena shirira bandha. As long as the mind is saturated with these karmic ideas or fruit of ideas, one will act in such a way that you will stay bound up to a material body, birth after birth. This is Rishabhdev speaking. So then comes the punchline in the third verse. So it's a nice little lesson right here. So he says, Eva mana karma vashang buyung de avindiyatman yubadiyamane is the first part of the verse. So karma vashang means impelled by the force of karma. If the mind is saturated with these karmic ideas, you're pushed to act in a certain way according to your as you go through life, isn't it? Eva mana karma vashang buyung de avindiyatman yubadiyamane. Again, by the force of avidya or ignorance, the soul is forced. Then comes the solution to the problem. Priyatir niyavan mai vasudeve namuchade dehi yogena tavat. Again, yavatavat. As long as one does not have love for me, this is Rishabhdev speaking, he's an incarnation of Krishna or Vishnu or Vasudev. Priyatir niyavan mai vasudeve. So he's identifying himself with Vasudev. Namuchade dehi yogena tavat. One will not be liberated from the bondage of a material body, and therefore one will not stop suffering. So the whole key is there. It begins with the inquiry into Atma Tattva, and it culminates in love for Krishna. That's the only way to become truly liberated from birth and death. And this is why we don't search for mukti, as it were, in and of itself, but we understand the value of that. So much of Srila Prabhupada's preaching, of his teaching, was based on the simple truths in the Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna is making the point that we should always see the evils of birth, old age, disease, and death. Isn't it? Is it janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha dosha nadasha? How many times did Prabhupada say that in his career? You know, it means that we have to be very sober-minded and understand that we cannot be happy in this material world because we're always threatened by old age, disease, and death, and rebirth, and that we have to inquire into the truth of the soul and its relationship with God, and from the proper source, realize soul. And in this way, begin the process of devotional service, which culminates in love for Vasudev, which will give us liberation as a byproduct and immerse us in the ocean of happiness that doesn't have this duality of pain and pleasure, and it's not temporary. So all of that begins with this understanding of our present verses, Najayate Mirite Vakadachan. Understanding that we're never born, we never die, and that our real problem in life is how to realize our eternal nature and to live on that platform of spirit in connection with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Madhu Mangal, ji?
Isn't there a thing called Krishna karma?
Krishna karma, yes. Krishna karma means action for Krishna. It's synonymous with bhakti. You know, bhakti yoga truly engages all of our being, our senses, our mind, our intelligence, our voice, our wealth, whatever we have, has to be connected with Krishna. So Krishna karma is really acting for Krishna. Yes, Prabhu?
I've heard that Krishna karma actually produces, like for a devotee, tangible result, almost like a allowance or walking around money. I notice he gets a little extra opportunity for facility because Krishna is more or less rewards him the way a father would reward a son who's done a good job taking out the reiki of the leaves. You know? that aside from the benefit of devotional service. Can you expound on that?
Well, I that may be from a specific passage you've read or talk by Srila Prabhupada. But in general, I mean, you can't do bhakti yoga, as we've been given it, without doing Krishna karma. The word karma literally emphasizes the activity aspect of Krishna bhakti, doing something practical with your senses. Of course, you know, we also work with our mind, which is, you know, even more important than our intelligence. But the word karma in this case seems to emphasize that. Now, when we engage in Krishna's service, he gives us facility. I mean, I think that's what you're describing. Krishna will give us facility to serve him in proportion to our purity and our desire to serve him. Srila Prabhupada had a burning desire to fulfill the order of his spiritual master and the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Now, that burning desire wasn't fulfilled right away. You know, it was like a gestation period, if you will, in India for so long. But by when Prabhupada actually got on the boat and started the adventure in 1965, he was given facility beyond, I think, what he even, you know, at least expressed, what he could even imagine, you know, that it would become a success in such a fantastic way in a short 12 years. So this is an example of a pure devotee acting for Krishna in a hopeless and a helpless way, completely throwing himself on the mercy of the Lord and in great faith and being given, a huge amount of facility. So, yes, that will happen, in proportion to our actual surrender.
The reason I mention that is because you often see devotees joining the Krishna Consciousness Movement from a rather unfortunate background.
Mm-hmm.
And while they are devotees, very many nice things occur for them in their life, the way they're eating, the way they're sleeping, the way they're
right.
dressing and talking and behaving. And then sometimes if they leave and go back to the old habit, that's it all like swept away, you see, you know, completely ruined.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
But I had another question if I could. Is that
yeah, okay, we just have to wind it up because 8 o'clock is kind of...
Because the question, very quickly answered it, that...
By the way, I just want to let you know, this is a very old and dear devotee of Srila Prabhupada named Naranarayan Vishwakarma Prabhu.
You're a humble and eternal servant.
Who was one of the pioneers of building Rath carts and building Mayapur, and you helped draw out the whole plans for the first Mayapur building.
Yeah.
And so many other things, and designing the internal of the L.A. temple and building it back in the early 70s. So he's very...
And I still managed to be a great offender.
And he has a whole personal bhakti program. Many children who have also grown up and are now devotees.
So like, really quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because we're running out of time completely.
Yeah.
Is that when Prabhupada wrote on the Chalajita boat, and he wrote his poem, and he said, make me dance, like Prabhupada on the string, make me dance. In a sense, he's asking Krishna to... turn him into like a marionette, in a sense, right? You move the fingers and the figure dances.
Yeah.
Isn't that a bit a reverse of what it states in the Bhagavad Gita, where the Paramatma is the quiet bird and the soul is the active bird? Is that Prabhupada asking you act and I will become passive?
I don't think he's asking to become passive. I mean, that analogy of the in the tree of the two birds, you're thinking of that, yeah. Well, that's like a position of the conditioned soul. I mean, that's really where that comes from.
Oh, so you're saying the liberated soul, it's not like that.
No. The liberated soul is not trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree, for sure.
Right.
He's working in complete harmony with the other bird. I think of it more like what Krishna is telling Arjuna in the 11th chapter, Nimitta Matram Bhavasavya Sachin, that the battle is already won, you just be my agent. You almost be like a weapon, a hand, you know, a hand. You know, that's how Prabhupada said we should be part of like a machine or like the hand of Krishna. So that the idea is to be completely in tune with the Lord's will. In that, you know, in a very poetic way, dancing to his tune, you know, to his song. And there's no misstep, as it were. You make me dance. In other words, he was saying, you must have brought me here for some reason. Please make, you know, one of the main prayers in that was all prayer, is that make my power of speaking such that it will enter the hearts, you know. Because Prabhupada, as he expressed in the preface to his Bhagavatam, you know, he say, I know there may be so many imperfections, but I take heart from this verse from Narada Muni, Tad Bhagva Sargo Janataka, even if imperfectly composed, then it's because it's in pure glorification of the Lord, it's accepted by great souls and chanted. So he was confident and praying that the Lord would empower him that even though he may have some doubts about his own English, you know, and whatever, that Krishna would speak through him, and then he would work through his other senses, and in this way he would
but
feel.
Is that not a really good hint for us?
Yes.
I mean, we can, with our embodied sense, say, "Oh, I will do this, I will do that to serve Krishna." But what when we come to the point where we say, "Actually, I am simply egotistically with a shallow ego trying to do this or this, and I'm offering to you as though that were devotional service." Yeah. But what if I say, no, you have a purpose, you're Krishna, you can see every heart, I can only see very little. Why don't you then make me do?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
If you make me do, the result will be good.
Yeah.
If I do, the result will be impressive to people like me. Or not like even, but if you do, then it will be a benefit.
Yeah, we have to actually pray like that at every moment, and then we'll be successful.
You corrected, like, super soul.
Thank you. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.